We head out to the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline and welcome on one of our favorite guests throughout football season the entire year of the Monday morning quarterback, Albert Breer. Albert, welcome to the show, buddy.
Hey, Albert.
What's up, guys? How are we doing?
I feel a little better now that Max Crosby and Devontae Adams aren't playing. Does that mean all the pressure is on the Browns going into this game?
I say there's a ton of pressure on the Browns in general. I mean, just based on the way they played and you know the way they lost that game to the Giants, and you know, like the way that Deshaun's playing and how that relates to everything else. Where's their identity on offense? You know, I still think they're a pretty good football team on defense, but yeah, I mean, it's a team that has a lot going on right now, you know, and I certainly think you know it's interesting because you know the Raiders are coming off a loss to the Panthers now, right? And there aren't very many teams that the Raiders can say, yes, we definitively should beat that team, but that's one of them, you know? And so to lose to the Panthers, I think, you know, is going to have the Raiders focused and coming back, and even without Crosby or Devontae, put them in position to really test. And it's going to be a test of Antonio Pierce's program, too. So the Browns just can't roll the balls out and expect to win. But they absolutely should win the ball game based on the injury situation that Raiders are facing and the loss that they're coming off of.
Albert, it's easy for us here in Cleveland to be sort of these eternal optimists when the season starts and feel like, oh, you know, the Browns are going to have a similar year to last year. They're going to make the playoffs again, all this different stuff. So with that in mind, like the 1-2 start, I think from our perspective is shocking. But from your perspective, somebody who has more of a national sort of feel on all these teams, is the Browns getting off to a 1-2 start surprising to you?
Well, I don't know, man. Like, I know a lot of people from Cleveland. Obviously, a lot of my friends from college are from Cleveland. I don't know too many eternal optimist sports fans from Cleveland.
That is true.
I don't know what you're talking about there. yeah, I think it's fair to expect more. You know, that Giants game, again, is a winnable game. You saw what the Giants are last night. They're a middle-of-the-pack football team at best. And I think coming off of last year, with the difference that Jim Schwartz made, with the ability to win 11 games despite starting 5 different quarterbacks, to win despite the offensive line issues, and then to put the pressure on yourselves by making the staff change that they made and saying goodbye to Alex Van Pelt. Obviously, Bill Callahan, they didn't have control over that one. Or they did, but they did the right thing there. You know, I think it does put, you know, the people in charge in the crosshairs here. And I think after the way that they played without Deshaun in there and the investment they made in Deshaun, it's fair to say, like, look, this is a team that won 11 games last year with a rotating crew of quarterbacks, was able to get Joe Flacco off the couch and in position to win ball games at the end of the year. It's fair to expect that the team should be even better with a fully healthy Deshaun Watson back in there based on the investment that the team made in Deshaun Watson. And yet, you know, here we are, and they're 1-2, and, you know, it's no games in September are must-win, guys, right? Like, that's just not what it is this time of year. But you know, as far as like pivotal games, I'd say this Sunday is a pivotal one for the Browns.
Albert Breer of the MMQB on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. Miles has had feet issues. In week one we heard foot, then we heard feet, now we hear feet, Achilles,
thigh.
And thigh.
Yeah.
Should the Browns be preparing to be without Miles at some point this season? Should we prepare ourselves?
Yeah, well, foot problems generally don't go away. And as we've seen in the Christian McCaffrey saga, the Achilles thing can be troublesome and risky to put a guy out there. So will there be a point in the year where it makes sense to sit him down? I think based on the nature of those injuries, as you laid them out, I would say yes. Like it's tough for any player to make it through a 16-game season or 17-game season, but especially a guy who's got the tread on his tires that Miles does. I mean, this is, what, year 8 for him, I believe, right? Am I right about that?
Sounds about right.
Yeah,
I think it's year 8 for him. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot that they have to – I mean, when you have that sort of stuff going on this early in the year and a guy who's got the mileage that Miles does, I think you got to plan for – the eventuality that at some point you're going to be with him without him for a week or two. You just hope that maybe it's a maintenance thing at some point rather than something worse.
Albert, you talked about the commitment that this team obviously made to Deshaun and bringing him here and then this offseason sort of doubling down with the hiring of Ken Dorsey, trying to build an offense for him. You know, it's more so fan noise at this point, but given the slow start to the season and how the offense has looked, in what world, like, what would it actually take for the team to consider benching him and pivoting to something like Jameis Winston stepping in as the starter?
I mean, the hard thing about that is just the implications, right? And I think you can look to the Bryce Young situation in Carolina as kind of your guidepost there, right?
Yeah.
Like, they benched Bryce Young, and they got a first-year head coach in Dave Canales, right? And Andy Dalton throws for over 300 yards. What's the implication of that? Well, Bryce Young wasn't playing well, right? Like, he wasn't seeing the middle of the field. He wasn't throwing the ball downfield. And he was looking at the rush, which is a death knell for young quarterbacks, right? Like, once you start looking at the rush, you're in trouble. Means you don't want to get hit, you know? And so I think part of the thing with Bryce Young was, it was like he probably needed to be sat down, but it was also, can a first-year head coach really sell Bryce Young to his locker room? And now, like, you look at the next phase of that, like, if Andy Dalton keeps playing this way, and I'm not saying it's going to be 300 yards every week, but if he keeps playing well, like, those veterans in that locker room don't care about your three-year plan. You know what I mean? Like, they don't care about – they care about – I mean, 80 to 90% of them don't know what team they're going to be on next year. They care about the here and the now. And so, like, that's the risk, right? Like, if you were to take Deshaun Watson out and say, like, we're just going to give him a blow, and then Jameis Winston comes in and throws for 800 yards in 3 weeks, and you go 3-0, you know what's probably not happening? You're probably not going to be able to put Deshaun Watson back in because your locker room is going to look at that and say, yeah, like, that's the guy right there. Like, how do you explain that to Jedrick Wills, who's playing for a contract? How do you explain that to Amari Cooper, who's in a contract year? If Jameis Winston comes in and plays well, you say, oh, yeah, by the way, just for the long-term good of the franchise, we're putting Deshaun Watson back in there. You really can't do it, you know? So I think that has to be a very measured decision because of the implications that come along with it. You know, and I think the interesting thing is how much they've invested in trying to get this right. I mean, it's really the reason Alex Van Pelt is gone, you know, is because ownership, because people from ownership on down wanted – more out of Deshaun Watson, you know, in the third year after the trade. Like, I think Alex Van Pelt on balance did a really good job with the quarterbacks last year. Wouldn't you guys agree with that?
Yeah, I would say so.
Right. So, like, what was the reason to fire him? Well, it's because you don't think you're getting enough out of Watson. So that's the other part of it is, you know, if you're not getting more out of the owner's $245 million investment. I don't think I have that number right. Is it 245? I can't remember
for
what
Deshaun,
the total number is.
Could be 235.
It's 230 for
Deshaun. Could be 230.
230. Okay, 230. So if you're not making enough of the owner's $230 million investment, then somebody's usually got to pay for that.
Albert, I had ex-Major League Baseball player Jason Stanford on as my co-host yesterday, and he had similar but not entirely the same shoulder surgery on his throwing shoulder at the end of his career. And he said the first year, even though he was healthy enough to play, he just didn't have that touch back. And I think that plays out with what we saw the first 3 years here. So there's this weird balance of healthy enough to play, structurally sound, versus getting back to your old self. Should we expect the touch to take as much as the rest of this season into next year to come back to where it was pre-surgery?
Yeah, I hadn't heard that before, but that is an interesting point. Like, if you don't have your touch and your feel, that's really going to hurt you as an NFL quarterback. So, and it's kind of interesting because something like that could come up as a crutch to sit him down, you know, and say, okay, like, we're going to give him a break now if he continues to play this way. Guys, I know what other teams are seeing when they're looking at Deshaun. I know what I hear, and, you know, it's just like a guy who doesn't feel the rush, who's playing with no instincts, who's playing with no confidence, who, you know, doesn't trust himself out there, doesn't trust the offense, doesn't trust his teammates. Like, he looks to most people like a shell of himself right now. So, like, could the shoulder be a part of it? Sure. I'm just not sure that's all of it, you know. And I think the interesting thing to me is, like, I do wonder, how many people in the building are telling him hard or giving him hard truths. You know what I mean? Like giving him the hard truth. Like for all the crap that Bill O'Brien has taken over the years for his style of coaching, Deshaun Watson was always getting the truth from Bill O'Brien. They had built the relationship to the point where Billy felt very comfortable getting after Deshaun and coaching him hard and telling him the truth. It just feels to me like that's sort of what he needs right now is tough love. I hope he's getting it from Dorsey and other people in the building.
I want to follow up on your comments kind of on Alex Van Pelt and how, you know, they're not getting the most out of this $230 million investment. Somebody had to kind of pay for that. So if that continues this year, like if he doesn't turn it around and he still looks bad come December and then you're in the offseason and they're weighing their options, who pays for it at that point? And I know we're kind of getting our ahead of ourselves here. I don't want to put some like doomsday outlook on the season because there's still a lot that can happen. But, you know, is it the coach that you just gave an extension to or is it finally Deshaun Watson? Like, well, how do you think that would play out?
It's just so hard because it's like, I mean, you've mortgaged that contract enough now. And, you know, every dollar is guaranteed. And he hasn't played well enough to get a deal somewhere else that's going to offset that. Like, you're just going to have to write checks, you know. Someone else will be able to sign him for the minimum, and he won't care because he knows Cleveland's footing the bill, you know. So, like, I don't know if giving up on him after this year is even on the table. Now, going into his last year, maybe that's different, you know. But I have a hard time seeing where having to pay, I mean, what would it be? Like, I think around $90 million or $92 million for the next 2 years without having the guy on the roster will be a palatable thing for the team to do, especially when you consider the cap implications. So then what else can you change? Well, if you can't change the player, you change coaching in some way, right? And, you know, I like the logic in Kevin Stefanski doing what he did here. I think it was like similar to what Baltimore did and where Baltimore has sort of moved their offense forward, going from Marty Mornwig to Greg Roman to develop a run game for Lamar Jackson. Then they felt like that was established. They wanted to evolve it again. And so they hired Todd Monken to develop a pass game off the run game that was already established there. Like, I think that's sort of what Stefanski's trying to do is evolve his offense from like the Kubiak base that they've had and what they built under Alex Van Pelt to include some more things that, that Deshaun's comfortable with. Ken Dorsey obviously has some Patriot background and having worked for Brian Daboll, which is the stuff that, you know, Deshaun is comfortable with from Houston. I don't know if you can fire an offensive coordinator after a year. I mean, it's just like, who are you looking at now? Cause I'd say Kevin's done a really good job. Like if you're not judging him just based on the quarterback, he's done a phenomenal job over the last 4 years, you know, and really kind of changed the face of the franchise. Same goes for Andrew Berry. Like how much can you make those guys pay for one mistake as costly as this mistake seems to have been? It's a really weird and tricky spot. And, you know, I don't know, man. Like, I don't know if, like, just changing out the coordinator does it again, you know? I mean, it's weird, and I think a lot of it's on Deshaun. And, you know, again, because of the contract, I don't know if you make Deshaun – if you turn Deshaun into the one who has to pay for it.
Albert, four teams right now below 500 that came into the season with playoff expectations are maybe higher. Miami at 1-2, Cleveland at 1-2, Cincy at 0-3, Jacksonville at 0-3. Would you put the Browns as maybe in the best position of those four disappointing teams, or would you put them at the bottom of the pile?
I put them in the middle. I think Jacksonville's in a really weird spot. You know, they play a Texas team that's coming off of a loss, you know, and like a tough loss, their first loss of the year this week. So I, you know, it'd be an upset if they beat Houston this week. Then they play Indianapolis the week after. If they lose both those, that's two like division losses. Now you're 0-5 and you're going to London for 2 weeks, you know, and you have the Bears and the Patriots over there. So those that would qualify as winnable games, but who knows what the psyche of the team's going to be at that point, you know? So it's hard for me to see a scenario where the Jaguars surge coming out of this. Miami's just the quarterback injury. It's just really hard to, like, see a clear path out right now. Maybe that changes, but it's hard to see a clear path out. I'd say the Browns are probably in the second-best situation to rebound just because of the playoff experience everybody has on the team. And I think the Bengals will be the top of the list. Their offense looks like their offense. The last 2 weeks, their offense has been fine. Burrow's looks like Burrow. Chase looked like Chase on Monday night. Higgins is getting his feet underneath him. The question for them is on defense. And I trust Lou Anarumo is going to figure it out. He's got some stuff to figure out with his pass rush, with his corners, but I think the Bengals have the best shot to emerge from that crew that you just mentioned and make it to the playoffs.
Albert, we had an interesting sort of setup a couple weeks ago when Bill Belichick was in Philly sort of parading around when they were getting ready to play the Falcons on Monday night. As we start to already sort of picture coaches on the hot seat and all these different things, what situation you think potentially that could open up within this season and going into next year would make the most sense for Bill Belichick in 2025?
It's so funny because you mentioned that, you know, with Philly.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the type of city that is. Sirianni is 2-1. He's made the playoffs all 3 years as head coach, and he went to the Super Bowl a year and a half ago. And this is what we're talking about. You
funny.
Know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, you have to throw them in the pile because they just changed coordinators on both sides of the ball, guys that Sirianni wasn't associated with. And, you know, we've seen them, you know, the last couple of times try to make the move, you know, too soon rather than too late. You know, with both Chip and Doug, like, the owner had just a feel for where the team was and made a decision before, you know, giving anybody an extra year of grace. So Philly would be on the list. Giants, obviously, he's got the connections there. Dallas, he's got the relationship with the Joneses. Somebody's got to finish in third. Somebody's got to finish in fourth in the NFC East. Looks like the Commanders actually might not be the last place team. And then the Jaguars would be another team I would just point out because of the relationship that Bill has with the Cons. He was actually a voice in their hiring of Doug Marrone in 2017. Built a relationship with Shad Khan's son, Tony. They got a quarterback there. It's Florida. He's got a residence down there. The Jaguars would sort of be the dark horse for me right now.
Yeah, it's Florida, but it's Jacksonville, Albert.
Yeah.
Albert, that's all I could say.
Albert, really?
Florida, sort of. Then, right?
Yeah, it's
Florida adjacent.
It's close to Florida adjacent. Really great stuff, buddy. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, Albert.
I would say Florida man is more prevalent in Jacksonville than Miami, though. Wouldn't you agree with that?
100%. Yeah, I think that has to do with the trafficking of meth, but I haven't really looked into it that much. Yeah. Be good, Albert.
Thanks, man.
I'll talk here before I get myself in any more trouble. Have a good weekend, guys.
You too, buddy. Albert Breer there on the MMQB on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. I hate when, because there is a part of some of the reaction this week that has been like, guys, we're week three. Like, can I get, like, some of this is just, it feels worse than it is. But this week, it's funny, I called the Giants game the game that can affirm or negate the first two games. It's either going to affirm that the Cowboys game is who you were or who you are right now, or it's going to affirm the Jags game is. And because you lost the way that you lost, even with some momentum in that second half, yeah, it kind of affirmed the Cowboys game is closer to who you are right now. Well, I think this game, one of the reasons why it's so important is just to negate the negativity. Just put it on pause.
Yeah.
For at least another week.
Well, and it doesn't help that, like, the one game you won is also a team that's 0-3. Like, that almost, to your point on, like, affirming or not, like, that almost just feels like the two games that you played where you played your worst, you lost, and then the one game where you played somewhat better, it was against the team that hasn't found a way to win a game yet. So, what is that? That's more about the fact that they're just really bad than maybe that you're, you know, you were playing above your skis somehow. It's a tough dilemma to be in. I just looked this up because we hear so much about, like, the number of teams that start the season 0-2 and don't make the playoffs. And we talk about the Bengals and we talk about Houston from last year and how many teams have done that. I just wanted to look up how many teams have made the playoffs starting 1-3. And ironically, the article is about this Browns-Raiders matchup this weekend. 42 teams that began the season 1-3 have made the playoffs since 1970.
It's about one a season. Math is hard.
Since
less than
1970,
one a season.
Yeah, it's a lot less than one a season because that's
a lot less. So it's 54 seasons going on, 53 seasons. Ah, see,
that's
math.
A lot less than one a season.
A lot less. 40. No, I'm not going to have a mathematical argument on air.
I'm not even good at math, so I usually lose those.
I think another way to look at this game is this now becomes, and I hate games like this where, okay, if you lose, it is, you know, hair on fire. fire people, bench people, cut people, trade people is where I think everybody's going to be. And I wonder where the locker room's going to be as well. The thing that bums me out is because Crosby and Devontae are out, I don't know how much credit you're getting with a win. And that bums me out, man. Like, I'd love to be able to come out on Monday and be like, yeah, we toasted them Raiders. Can we? Like, because I think the reaction is going to be, no Crosby, no Devontae.
I think it's going to be more like a sigh of relief. Like, it'll be like, whoo, all right, we survived that one. Let's go. Let's see what we got in Washington. Like,
is that how I'm supposed to sound at 2:03 on Monday?
Maybe that's more of a Lima.
Like, I just let one rip. Whoo! Doggy. I feel so much better about that one. Let's go with John. Welcome to the show, John.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing well, buddy. What you got for us?
So, it's tough because I agree that this weekend's not necessarily a must win, but like.
It's just a must not lose, right, John?
Yeah, no, it's just not a must not lose. Yeah, exactly. But let me tell you, it's Browns fans. So, if the Browns somehow managed to lose to the Raiders this weekend, with a team that's missing Max Crosby and Devontae Adams, I don't know how this city, this franchise, or you guys picking up callers on Monday are going to survive, because it's going to be an absolute inferno. Fans are about to rain down. I'm talking full-on dumpster fire, and like you can practically already hear the pitchforks rattling.
Because
we don't got the patience for this here. I don't know. This might just be the spark that like sets everything ablaze in Cleveland. And I know it's just one game, but I'm just talking from the fan standpoint. You guys are not. I don't know. Like, good luck on Monday, depending on the results, because like we're going to need a huge fire extinguisher for this city.
I
appreciate that, John, in more ways than you realize, because I realize that I will be, well, everyone will be going up against it, trying to make sense of where the Browns are. Be good, buddy. Go Browns.
People are already crafting their takes for Monday. Like, in anticipation that they're going to lose, they're like, I'm going to call into Ken and Lima's show at 8:07, and I'm going to have this take about the Browns. And it's going to be either topics A, B, C, or D. Fire Kevin Stefanski. Deshaun Watson sucks. Can Nick Chubb save the day? Like, they're already coming up with whatever they're going to decide to have as their take on Monday. They lose this game.
So with that, you had kind of talked about, well, the culture of Kevin Stefanski.
Yeah.
That's the other part of this. Like, a win does not affirm the culture of Kevin Stefanski.
No.
But a loss certainly would show you that culture is more of a moving target, at least right now in Berea, than we thought.
I push back on that a little bit, because I do think a win reestablishes what I thought about this team week one to week two, which was you can have a devastating loss that feels like the sky is falling on the outside looking in, and they really can't, like. To me, part of Kevin Stefanski's culture is this idea that, he's so robotic with it that it gets annoying, where he gives you the cliches of, well, you know, one game at a time, and I take it week to week.
Let's score more points than the other team.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's the type of stuff that, like, we're so used to with Kevin Stefanski that it kind of loses its meaning. But we also say the team plays off of that vibe that they buy into that idea, if that makes sense. So if they're able to respond after another embarrassing loss and bounce back in that way, even though it's a team they should beat, that still to me sort of at least establishes that, like, okay, this team still is buying into to the message that Kevin Stefanski is selling.
All right, guys, low blood pressure on three. 1, 2, 3. No pulse. The good news today, no Max Crosby, no Devontae Adams on Sunday. Me likey. No Jack Conklin, no Jed Wills, no David Njoku, already ruled out for this game. Me no likey, me do likey. Jason Pinkston, who joins us now on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Pink, welcome to the show, buddy. Happy Football Friday.
Happy Football Friday, guys. It's another Friday night.
So, because you are a former Browns offensive lineman, because you are still very much involved in the trenches now in your own coaching and coaching realm here, I'm curious, when you watch the O-line play, let's just take it to the Giants game. Is this a coaching issue? Is it an injury issue? Is it an execution issue?
All of the above. I mean, it was pretty disheartening watching that game on Sunday. I mean, we got beat up. I mean, we got beat up all around. it looked rough, man. Eight sacks in one game. I don't remember. I can't think back of a time where I've lost that to our offensive line. I mean, typically we have one of the best offensive lines in the National Football League, and it just, you know, with the injuries and just, you know, so we had some guys just getting outplayed, and it hurts. It stings to see it. Obviously being a former offensive lineman, obviously being a former Brown, just seeing our guys get pretty much manhandled, it was very disheartening to watch that game.
So if we had to start somewhere this weekend with the O-line, do you get, like, what's like the first thing you got to get started to get right so that this O-line can start giving everybody a chance to actually, I don't know, run the offense?
I feel like we got to run the ball. We really have to run the ball to slow these guys down. You know, and just we got to show that we're physical, because right now, and the film is the film and it doesn't lie, we are not a physical football team. And I think we spoke about this back in week one. What is our identity as a football team? You know, I just don't see it. I feel like we just pass the ball a couple downs here. We run the ball a couple downs here. Then we have a penalty or two in between. We have no kind of identity of who we are as an offense.
Jason Pinkston, former Browns offensive lineman, joining us on the show. Jason, along the lines of the O-line, and you kind of alluded to different areas that can be fixed or need to be fixed, I want to highlight specifically Jedrick Wills. We know his career has been sort of a roller coaster ride. There's been some moments where he looks like he's super talented, and then there's been moments where it looks like effort's a problem. As he made his debut in 2024 here this past weekend, is there something there that you see like that's fixable with him specifically, or is this just a lost cause for the Browns that we're going to be talking about a guy that they're not going to end up re-signing, you think, this offseason?
I you know what? For that to be his first game back, it was very, very disheartening. There was a lot of plays there where the effort and confusion, it just wasn't there. He wasn't locked in. I thought there were some plays there where he just gave up on, and where quarterback is scrambling in the pocket. It was blatant. I like the kid. You know, I hope he gets healthy. Clearly he's not. He wasn't right, and, you know, he got banged up again. But I think, you know, based off that and what we've seen thus far, you know, I don't know if the Browns bring him back, you know, next year. There has to be a lot of improvement between now and the end of the season before I would even bat an eye at bringing him back. You know, I just – for, you know, for what he's going to command to be paid, and how he has performed, it's not adding up. It's not adding up for me. I'm sorry, and I hate to be so negative, yeah. But you know I love this team, and we have the guys where we could be good. We're just not putting it together. We're not, and I don't. You know, sometimes I feel like that falls on the players of holding each other accountable, and it falls on the coaches as well. But we're just not getting it done right now. And thank God that Max Crosby's out and Devontae Adams is out. Or it was going to be a long weekend for us. You know, yeah. It was going to be a very long Sunday for us. I mean, it's still going to be a game to we're going to have to go and play well and win. You know, when your coach goes on, you know, live TV and said that guys were making business decisions, I can almost guarantee you those guys were full pads all week. And it was more like training camp, and they were mixing things up, and they were getting after it. So, you know, he made you feel like, you know, he wants these guys to run through a brick wall, and I feel like Coach Pierce can get those guys to do that.
Along the lines of Jed Wills' development, we appreciate your honesty on the subject, because, you know, you have an eye for evaluating a guy like that, and, you know, we see so much, and there's obviously questions there, but to have it come from you, I think, is meaningful for us and the fans. But in terms of the offensive line as a whole, do you think at this point they're missing Bill Callahan? Like, is that the missing thing here that's had this offensive line up to a slow start?
You know what? We're missing him, but the reality is he ain't coming back. And we have what we have right now, and we got to do a better job across the board, from the coaching standpoint, from the players holding each other accountable and do what we need to do. But he's missed. You know, I talked to Nick a little bit over the weekend, and, you know, I feel like there's a couple guys missed that are no longer with this team and staff. But, you know, we have who we have right now, and that's not changing. And we only thing we can do is move forward.
Pink, I got to say, I think that was less talking and you and me talking each other off the ledge.
You know what? You were right. It was just Sunday was hard. Sunday was hard to watch. It was a very, very hard game to watch. And, you know, the Giants are a good football team, no doubt about it. But I did not think they would come in there and manhandle us the way they did.
So the Raiders are 1-2. You heard the Antonio Pierce business decision comment earlier this week. They're not going to have Max Crosby. They're not going to have Devontae Adams. I know it's a home game for them, but I'm just curious, like, from the Browns standpoint, we've heard must win. We've heard should win. We've heard should not lose. I'm just curious, like, how do you qualify or quantify this game and the importance of what it means and the difference between a win and a loss for the Browns on Sunday?
This is in my eyes, this is a must win. And all games are, you know, a must win. But this one is huge. It's an AFC game. It's a divisional game. So it's a must win. You know, like, we can't afford to lose these games anymore. Like, if we're going to be something and we're going to be who we think we are, and, you know, if we keep saying, oh, we have the right guys and, you know, we're standing on that, we need to go in Sunday and stand on business and win this football game. Now, with their guys out, Devontae Adams and Max Crosby, that is a big blow to that team. Those are their guys. Now, there's no excuse for us to go in there and let anybody wreck this game. I don't care if whoever it is lining them up on defense for them. If the game plan is we need to chip these guys, we need to chip them, whatever we need to do, we need to come out of there with a win.
Jason, you are fighting the good fight in the sense that you're a Browns fan and a former Browns player living in enemy territory, obviously out in Pittsburgh. They're off to a 3-0 start. I'm curious, though, like, from conversations you have, from a vibe check of our rivals across state lines there, is it like a 3-0 where they have a vibrato about them and they feel like this thing's going the right direction and, you know, it's Super Bowl, playing your Super Bowl trips? Or is it a 3-0 where they're like, yeah, we kind of feel like we're lucky to be in this spot?
You know what? You know, I'm so sick to my stomach to see these guys 3-0. But you know what? They're doing what they need to do to win football games. They're playing good defense, and they're not asking, you know, Justin Fields to go out there and win games. They're going out there and, hey, this is what the game plan is. Stick to the game plan, and don't turn the ball over, and we'll win the game. And they're walking around down in Pittsburgh right now with their heads held high. They crowned T.J. Watt Defensive Player of the Year already, and they're on their way to win the AFC North and play in the Super Bowl. And it makes me sick to my stomach because I freaking hate that team more than anything.
It's crazy, right? Like, they have this formula, and somehow it works every single year. It's mind-boggling.
You know what? And I love it to death, and me and my brother were actually talking about this. You know, they started this same stuff with Ben in his year. They were 11-0, and nothing was going to happen. Everything is going to be great. They're going to ride in undefeated season and win the Super Bowl. And then they had the biggest collapse in NFL history and lost every game. So there's still hope. There's still hope for us.
All right, Pink, speaking of hope, let's get that prediction for Sunday.
Well, I was really, really laying in bed here, and I was praying that no one called their local bookie like I told them last week, or went down to the sports book or one of those apps. I think this is going to be a close game, and it's going to be 17-14 Raiders.
Oh, no. Man, that Giants game did a number on you, Pink.
But listen here. Here is my thinking of this. If I say they're going to win, they lose. So if I say
you're
they're going to lose,
yourself,
then maybe they win.
So you think you're the curse?
I'll be the bad guy here, and I'll bet against myself, and hopefully that they go out and win this game because I want them to win this game.
Thank you for your sacrifice, Pink. This is why you're one of our favorite guests. Happy Football Friday again. And we're going to get a dub. It's on your back on this one, buddy. Appreciate you. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Jason.
Sacrifice me for the better of the team. I'm here for it.
Been trying to do that for like a decade or so, buddy. Be good.
Have a good weekend, guys.
You too.
Jason Pinkston there in the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.